Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Mullinger's Weekly Ramble, a brand new podcast with your host and indeed your friend, me, James Mullinger. I'm here, you're here. What's been going on? Well, it's the Oscars this weekend, which I cannot deny I am spectacularly excited about. As a movie fan, I've spent my entire life obsessed with movies, quite literally, like, you know, from 8, 9 years old, cutting out VHS covers from radio rentals and Ritz Video, which then became Blockbuster Video, catalogs, creating my own magazines, going to video shops on a daily basis, to present day, when aged 45, I still have a vast collection of VHS videos in my basement, actually housed on original Blockbuster Video shelving that is from the Blockbuster Video in Lancaster Moor, here in St. John, New Brunswick, where I live. So my obsession with films has been all-encompassing my entire life. So in many ways, this weekend, Oscar weekend, is my Super Bowl. As someone that, you know, I have become interested in sports because of my children, I love the nature of sporting events, but I'm not per se a sporting obsessive. I am a movie obsessive. That is my passion. That is my love. And this weekend is a big one, as it always is. But it's a big one for me because this is actually the very first time that I have seen every single movie nominated for Best Picture Oscar, which of course is a more impressive thing now in the last previous few years, because obviously for the last few years they have expanded the number of films in competition for Best Picture from 5 to 10, presumably for you know, reasons of money, which unfortunately seems to be the reason for everyone doing everything these days, except this podcast. So, hey, you know, just think, just by listening to this, you are keeping it real. You are sticking it to the man. You are taking those organizations, those grocery stores that are showing record profits at a time of not just global poverty, but an all-time high housing crisis. And these grocery stores seeing record profits, and they're up in the prices, and they're abolishing half-price discounted food. Everyone does everything for money. The reason I'm sure that the movie Best Picture thing went from 5 to 10 was so that more movies could benefit from the profile and the prestige and the publicity that comes with being a Best Picture. Everything happens because of money. Except this, I'm sat here with you, not because of money. I'm sat here for the same reason that I do everything I do, which is be a stand-up comedian living in New Brunswick, to launching a print magazine out of Atlantic Canada, to releasing my last comedy album on vinyl only. No digital, just vinyl. I do it because I love it and I love you. So anyway, back to the point we're talking about. Movies, there are a 10 in competition. And as I say, as of this morning, I've seen all of them. I'll be honest, as a movie fan, I'm not always overly enamored with Oscar movies. Now, I don't say this in a kind of faux kind of anti-intelligence, you know, almost anti-snobbery way. I'm someone that just loves, I love cinema. I love the experience of going to the movies. I guess one of the best examples I can think of is I remember when the movie The Hitman's Bodyguard came out, a movie with Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson, a fantastic, you know, action thriller, comedy movie, buddy movie. And it received the worst reviews I'd seen in a long time. I remember all the newspapers and the magazines that I go to for my reviews, such as The Guardian in England and Empire magazine, which is my favorite film magazine in the world. I've been reading it since I was, you know, 7, 8 years old. My wonderful auntie Zoe still sends me, well, buys me a subscription every year. So it comes, I still get the same frisson of excitement when Empire arrives. Both these magazines gave that movie one star and kind of gave a litany of reasons as to why it was, you know, an appalling piece of cinema. And I went to see that movie on a Monday night with my wife in a packed Cineplex in St. John, where I live here in New Brunswick, Canada. And it's not often packed there when we live in a low population place. So it's rare for the cinema to be packed, although I did actually go yesterday to see something and it was packed, but it was cheap day. Anyway, my point is, when to see Hitman's Bodyguard, it got one star everywhere. And the movie, and I just loved it. Just thought it was entertaining, thrilling, such a buzz, such a ride. And the movie ended, and everyone, the lights came up, and everyone stood up. And I looked around the cinema and just saw just hundreds of smiling faces. And I just thought, this is a room full of real people, real hardworking people, you know, families, parents, kids, you name it, whatever, just people living their lives. And life isn't always easy, as we know. And they all had big smiles on their faces. And I just thought, wow, what a detachment there has become from the critics who go and see a movie like, and again, I'm just going to use an example here from the best Oscar list. And this isn't to say I don't like it, but, you know, for example, The Zone of Interest, which is an incredibly powerful piece of cinema. But was that, and not every movie has to be designed for entertainment, but... after a long, hard week, I don't know if The Zone of Interest is the kind of film that you want to necessarily sit through. I mean, Barbie, on the other hand, is. So again, kudos to the Academy for including a movie like Barbie in the Best Picture list. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that over the years, I have found that Oscar movies I tend to admire. I tend to be impressed by them. I tend to sit there and think to myself, "Wow, that's clever. Now that's clever. I like what they did there. Yeah. But I'm never actually engrossed or entertained. I mean, again, to bring an example up to speed. I mean, I just saw Poor Things, which actually I have to say I thought was going to be a pretentious twaddle. It is surprisingly entertaining for a movie that with such a kind of bizarre storyline, bizarre visuals. I did find it entertaining. Although I don't know if I was as entertained as I was seeing Hilary Swank in Ordinary Angels at the cinema. This week, went to see that with my son and his girlfriend, and we had a absolutely wonderful time. It's based on an incredible true story, incredibly moving. It's been kind of written off by a lot of people because it has it's a faith-themed movie. So yes, there are characters in it who are Christian, which seems to make a lot of people very angry. It's a very strange thing. It seems nowadays having a character who is Christian. Seems to be almost considered as sacrilege to some people as it used to be to have a blasphemy in a movie. Anyway, what are the movies that I liked? I absolutely loved American Fiction. I would say of all the Best Picture nominees, that is the movie that I found to be the most enjoyable. It was the funniest, one of the most thought-provoking, certainly. Also made me cry a couple of times. Anatomy of a Fall, of course, famously... France chose to not enter that into the best foreign language category, but maybe it'll win for best picture. Maestro, again, you know, kudos Bradley Cooper, great impression of Leonard Bernstein, bloody bloody blah. I sat through it, sat through it, wasn't engrossed. At no point did I feel like I was watching Leonard Bernstein or indeed immersed in a movie. The whole time I was just watching the movie going, yeah, good job, Bradley. Yeah, well done, Bradley. And I have to say, again, some of you are going to not like this. I felt the same way about Oppenheimer. Could have been an hour shorter. Very impressive, but, wasn't particularly entertained. Anyway, so Oscars this weekend. Next week we'll be talking about the results. It seems like everyone thinks Oppenheimer is going to absolutely clean up. People that I hope win, I have to say that, you know, one of the movies that I really, really, really did enjoy was The Holdovers. Again, I mean, it didn't jump out at me as the most epic Oscar movie ever. I enjoyed it partly because it reminded me of movies that I used to rent on VHS in the 80s. But Daveen Joy Randolph in The Holdovers has been obviously tipped as a shoo-in for the supporting actress role. I hope she gets that. I went to see The Boy and the Heron at the Imperial Theatre last week. Had to see that on the big screen in that beautiful historic theatre here in St. John. I hope that wins Best Animated. I hope Lily Gladstone wins for Killers of the Flower Moon. Supporting actor, again, I have to say I'm hoping for Sterling K. Brown. Absolutely loved him in American Fiction. And like I say, I have to say, I think American Fiction might be my favorite film of the Best Picture nominees. Anyway, so moving on. Oh, I actually must add an honorable mention to the most fun I've had in the cinema this year. And that would be the rom-com again, which received diabolical reviews. Anyone but you. Absolutely wonderful. Funny, charming, slightly filthy rom-com. Went to see it with my wife and kids, possibly inappropriately for them, on Valentine's Day, and we laughed like drains. So, in between all of this, I mean, I don't know how I do know how I found time to watch these movies. I found time by waking up at 4 in the morning. That is one of the amazing things with channeling one's ADHD into a superpower, is when you wake up at 4 a.m. and your brain's going 1,000 different places and it's saying, okay, you need to get out of bed, you need to go upstairs and write a chapter for your next book, write some jokes, do the laundry, start an email. But you know what? Start an email and then just write dear in the first three letters of the person's name, and then start another email to someone else and just write dear and the first few letters of their name, and then basically keep going until you've got about 150 draft emails in your drafts folder, and then leave your computer and go and start emptying the dishwasher. Then it's start doing the laundry, but only half do it, but put half of it in. I mean, that's basically, so what I now do, again, when you take your ADHD and you channel it, do something productive. Try and sit down and watch a movie. And if you've got to do six other things at the same time, do them. But take the superpower and work with it. Okay, so that's my advice. Anyway, anyone but you. Terrible reviews. They interestingly turned down, the filmmakers turned down a lot of money offered by the streaming services to pick up that movie, which might have seemed like a good option. Where it would have, of course, just been shunted out on Netflix, and it probably would have been number one for a day and then disappeared without trace. And instead, it went to the cinemas, and because everyone's crying out to see, you know, fun, entertaining movies on the big screen, one of the biggest box office hits of the year, with over $150 million at the box office. Don't let the streaming services take over. Support your local cinema. What else has been going? So I have been, gearing up for this show. As I said, there's going to be a lot of tangents in this. Like I say, it's all in the title, Everyday Ramble. I'm going to be rambling. I suppose I should point out, for British listeners, this isn't a podcast about me. I'm not a rambler. I am a rambler. For Canadian listeners, I should point out, in England, rambling means wandering through the woods, putting on a pair of, I guess, what we would call hiking here. In England, it's called rambling, I guess, because hiking has a sense of purpose and determination to it. In England, we don't really have much purpose or determination unless we're trying to do something really stupid, like get Brexit. Unless we're trying to completely torpedo the economy, then, oh my God, we've got a singular vision then. But I guess also England used to have a bit of a get up and go back in the day when it was, raping and pillaging the rest of the world. Invading and attacking and doing many deplorable things. But now it's generally just, it's the ultimate self-destruction / self-harming. England spent many years being the worst thing in the world to almost every other country in the world. And now England has kind of turned upon itself, and they seem determined just to make everything as bad as possible for themselves. So, let's make Brexit happen just so we can, literally just make everyone's lives worse. If in every single possible way, let's keep voting the wrong people in. Anyway, this isn't a political podcast. Speaking of the UK, I'll tell you what, one thing I did just learn. About a year ago, I went to give blood at the Canadian Blood Services Centre, because A, it's the right thing to do, obviously, and I had learned it was the right thing to do from a friend of mine, Zlatko, who is a senior doctor, surgeon at the St. John Regional Hospital, does incredible life-saving operations. You should Google his amazing work. Zlatko Pozeg, a hero and a saint, a miracle worker. Quite literally, these people are miracle workers that we are so blessed to have devoted their lives to this work. Again, you can tell I don't understand anything about medical. I'm rambling. So anyway, point being, I read an article on CBC or somewhere about this amazing work he was doing, but just how desperate they are for blood. So I thought, I'm going to go and give blood. So I got in touch, made an appointment, went in. filled out a million forms, and there was tons of questions, and incredibly specific questions like, have you ever swapped sex for drugs? Have you ever swapped drugs for sex? Have you, and it gets very specific, have you ever taken a blowjob from a one-armed an Egyptian round the back of the 3 mile? Anyway, no, but it's, they get very specific. So I answered about 100 questions, date of birth, years, you know, years I lived in England, but bloody, bloody, blah. But let's just say they asked a lot of questions, a lot of them very, very personal, yeah, about sex acts that one might have performed in different shapes and forms. Long and short of it is this. After filling out this colossal questionnaire, filling out a form online, putting, I'll go into the little room, and the lady behind the counter says to me, so is this right? Is this right? Is this right? You know, you've had a, I don't know, AIDS test, whatever else. Yep, yep, yep. And you lived in England between, you know, 2000 and something and 2000 and something. And I said, well yeah, obviously, I mean, it says there that I moved here. Question number one is, you know, when did you move here? And I moved here in 2014. So yeah, it stands to reason that between the years 2000 and 2005 or whatever it is, I lived in England. That stands to reason. And she said, oh, I'm so sorry. You can't give blood. And I'm like, what, why? And she said, because between those years you lived in, and I said, what? And she goes, mad cow disease. I said, you what? I mean, I said, hey, you know, I'm fairly sure I don't have mad cow. I actually did do that because sometimes I just can't resist the jokes. I did do that in the room. Yeah, that's who I am. I said, I'm pretty sure I don't have mad cow. And anyway, she said, you know, I said, I'm pretty sure I don't have it. And she said, well, anyone that lived in England between those years could have it, so you're not allowed to give blood here. And I was like, okay, well, this kind of feels like a waste of your and my time. I've been here for an hour and a half. I spent an hour filling out the form at home. Question number one was, when did you move to Canada? From England, and it was this date. Surely then the next line before the 500 questions about how many blowjobs I might have given or received, surely it could have just said, oh, well, if you lived in England before that time, it's a no-go. Anyway, so I said, look, I mean, I've come on this way. Is there any way around this? Is there any way of testing if I have mad cow disease so we can proceed and so everyone's time isn't wasted? And she went, well, there is one way of testing. I'm like, okay, good, what is it? And she goes, an autopsy. This is absolutely true. She was an autopsy. I said, well, you know what? I am keen to give blood. I am not so keen to give blood that I want to give all the blood, if you know what I mean. So anyway, we shook hands, bid each other farewell. Yeah, as I walked out, I could see them all kind of huddle around going, this is going to be a comedy skit soon. And it's not, because I understand rules. I respect rules, and they're all doing a good job. Anyway, a year goes by. And I just got a call this week saying they've changed the rules. I guess they're that desperate for blood that they're willing to accept mad cow blood. Because I think, let's face it, if you need a blood transfusion, if you're willing to take the risk, I guess you could probably sign a waiver. I'm willing to accept blood that could be infected with mad cow disease. I don't know. Anyway, the rules have changed. Canada's done what it does with most things and backed down on this thing. And now I can go in and give blood. So I can go and do the right thing. And I have to say, having watched the heart-rending film that I mentioned earlier, some Ordinary Angels with Hilary Swank, not to give away the ending, but I also want to become an organ donor. Anyway, that's that. Not very funny, just... just anyway, I get to go back and give blood. It's fun. So I've been doing shows almost... 3-4 times a week in various venues, warming up for this tour, both testing new material, but also running in the old material, running in the material I haven't done for 5, 10, 50, in some cases 20 years, to see if A, it still works, B, if I can still do it, C, in some cases, of course, it has become problematic. I mean, it's a very funny thing. There are jokes that I used to do 20 years ago that I absolutely would not do now, but I am currently doing, with the disclaimer to people that they are not to go on the old TikTok, Snapchat, BikBok, LikTok, flip-flop, whatever the hell this bullshit is that people go and slag people off for, on. So I've been testing. I flag it at the top. I mean, again, the posters for these warm-up shows do say it might be shit. It's out there. These are work in progress shows. One of my favorite venues to do these at is Long Bay Brewery here in Rosay. It's amazing. You can pack 45 people in there, and the posters say it might be shit. It's billed as a work in progress. Come inside, and I'm going to just spew out things for 2 hours. I will tape record the audience, and whatever works obviously stays in the show, and whatever doesn't work doesn't. The system, I record them. What I do is I go away and I transcribe the entire show, and then I highlight in red where the laughs come, and then work out what text or words or sentences or whatever in between the red I can lose to get to the laugh quicker. That's how the way in which I build a new show. It has been a lot of fun doing it, but also terrifying. Like I say, I'm dusting off jokes in some cases I haven't done in 20 years. I'm doing stuff which I'm well aware could well seem very, very problematic. I'm reading out my diary entries from the day that I lost my virginity. And it's very interesting doing all of this stuff, you know, now I get, you know, with, you know, my brain almost needs control and focus. It's, I guess, one of the things with ADHD that I kind of enjoy about stand-up traditionally is that when I'm on stage doing a tour show that has been honed to perfection, well, I say perfection, not perfection, my version of perfection, I'm not calling it perfection, my as good as I with my limited ability, the best I can do when I have these shows, for that 90 minutes and 2 hours that I'm on show on stage doing a tour show, I'm very focused. Whereas with these work in progress shows are all over the place, and some of the stuff that I've been giving away. If you're listening to this and you've been to one of these work in progress shows, please do get in touch and tell me what are the things that I guess you liked, what you were most horrified about, and there is that. I take risks. I tell stories that people maybe never want to hear again. But it's a fun process. It's, yeah, I guess there are some people that come to these shows. Somebody that comes to these shows that say to me, they come to these warm-up shows, they don't want to come to the polish shows. They want to come to the testing shows where I'm just basically up there with scraps of paper giving it a go. What terrifies me is I hate it when I put these shows on sale and I get these messages from people saying, oh, James, been meaning to come and see you for years, haven't seen you, haven't ever seen you, heard nice things, I'm coming to the show. And it's like, no, please don't come to this one. Come and see me at the Imperial Theatre. Come and see me at the Capitol, Playhouse, the Neptune. Come and see me at a big theatre. Don't come and see me at these tiny places where it's a mess. But the positive of that is it does enforce me to kind of raise the bar and actually give these shows, not that I wouldn't anyway, but it forces me to push it. And again, there's people that do enjoy them. I should point out, I am sitting in a nice little makeshift studio here. And by makeshift studio, I mean piles all every cushion and pillow in the house pile up around my head at my desk. Looking around, I have a Care Bear above me. I have a photograph of my local church, St. Paul's in Rosay, and I have a beautiful painting of me as a cat by my dear friend Lily McNulty at Romero House, who painted me that, I think, as a thank you for a VHS player I gave her. That's how many VHS players I have. If someone needs a VHS player, I'm your man. I have so many spares. Anyway, I'm apologizing for the sound in case you can hear the wind and the rain beating down and whistling through the air. Although, given that this is a podcast recorded in Atlantic Canada, I guess primarily about Atlantic Canada, getting used to the sound of rain is probably fairly necessary. So strap in. We've been quite lucky, actually, I have to say, here in New Brunswick for most of this winter. Poor PEI and Nova Scotia and New York have been hit pretty hard. We haven't had much snow. In fact, weirdly, the other week we had quite sunny weather in New Brunswick, and then in England there was like a snowfall, which just never happens now. There's hardly ever, people in England are crying out for snowfall, which no one in Atlantic Canada, you don't hear people in Atlantic Canada crying out for snow, but in England they're desperate for the beautiful, you know, white Christmas and all that. Anyway. I phoned my mum in the morning, and she was freaking out, going, "Oh my God, James, yeah, the snow is terrible. Dad can't make it to book club. I can't make it to the garden centre. The buses aren't running. The highways are closed." She's like waving the one of Zoom calls, and she's like waving the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph, and the headlines are all like Snowmageddon, Snowpocalypse. And I'm like, "Oh my God, how much have you got, Mum?" And she goes, "Almost a centimetre." I said, "Oh my God, almost." I said, "Do you know what we call that in New Brunswick? Bloody summer." Anyway, what was it? I think I went off the point there. Yeah, so warm-up shows in Longbow, they've been going well, revealing all kinds of things, terrible things from my past. I also did a warm-up show the other week in the middle of the woods, which is always a great place to do any type of gig. I mean, for me, it's just like the dream. In a place where it's Central Haynesville. I don't know why they call it Central Haynesville. It makes it sound like a big city. It is not. It is the woods. At Crab Mountain Inn, run by a lovely couple named John and Angela. Ethan Ash and I did a show there in the summer last year, and there was a power cut halfway through the show. Luckily, the room was small enough that we were able to carry on going. And by carry on, I mean me standing on the stage shouting while Ethan stood on a chair holding up a spotlight that consisted of the torch or the flashlight or whatever you want to call it, wherever you are, on his iPhone. It was the most New Brunswick looking gig ever. Doing a gig in pitch black in a power cut. Everyone's homes, we're basically just trapped in this gorgeous inn. And then 2 weeks ago, I was there doing the show, and there was a four-wheeler parked right outside that kept revving. People kept coming and going. A dog joined me on stage. I mean, that to me is what I love so much about, you know, in England, you get used to drunks and fights and hecklers. That's basically what you have to get used to. I love the fact that in Atlantic Canada, I have to get used to dogs on stage. I've had cats on stage. I've had a raccoon on stage with me in Sussex. Power cuts, of numerous power cuts, but to the extent now that I like have a whole like hour of power cut material that I can do at any point. This is fun. I hope you're having fun listening to this, by the way. The thing gave me the idea for this was that I found myself doing a lot of Instagram live videos from my car while I was sitting charging my electric car. That's right. I got an electric car, which means you spend a lot of time sitting in your car. If you're lucky, you spend a lot of time sitting in your car with your car charging. If you're unlucky, you spend a lot of time sitting in your car next to other electric cars lining up to use the one and only electric car charger in your town. And if you're really unlucky, you're in a line of cars, and at the front of that line, plugged in, is a school bus, because I shit you not, New Brunswick bought a fleet of electric school buses and did not correctly get their own chargers. So now the ginormous school buses use the public chargers, and there are not many. There's one in the KV, one fast charger for everyone in the KV with an electric car. And the school buses need to use it, I'm assuming, every day. And it takes them a not insignificant 4 hours to charge. So I turned up the other day because I was driving my son to Sussex. I turned up and the school bus had just got there, plugged in 4 hours. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of benefits to the electric car. Not least the fact that I have PTSD from the amount of money I've spent on gas. I mean, you're all still in it. You're all still in NAM. I'm out. I mean, I'm back home. I'm injured. I'm traumatized, but I'm out. You guys are still in the thick of it. You with the petrol, gas, whatever you want to call it, cars. I've still got the PTSD in that I'll be driving along and I'll go past a gas station and my mind goes, "Oh, you may as well go and get some gas." And you go from that to suddenly going, "Oh no, I don't need to." And it's a complete joy. It's I'm like the Vietnam vet that has the terrible nightmares and then wakes up and realizes that, you know, that actually life's amazing and that I'm back in the Bronx with a bottle of half drunk whiskey beside my table and I'm going to be able to go out on a massacre today. Right. You know, it's like that. where this example came from. Is it a metaphor? Is it a simile? Is it just my subconscious revealing the inner turmoil? I don't know. Anyway, electric cars. One of the worst things, of course, is when you get is when someone else is plugged in. You go, you wait for them to finish. They're then finished on 100%, and then the bastard doesn't come back. And you're like, can I unplug it? Can I not unplug it? And it's an etiquette thing that no one really knows the answer to. Again, I spend enough time sitting in parking lots anyway because my kids play sports. So late hockey games, soccer practice is going on too long. The coach has not realised that my life is timed to the minute with military precision. We're coming up to the end of this. Each one of these episodes will be in the region of 45 minutes, generally around now. I would dig into your questions, your feedback, your thoughts, your comments. So before episode 2, please do send me any questions you got. comedy@jamesmullinger.com. It's fair to say it's going to be, we're friends. We are literally friends. Like even if you and I have never met, but you've come to a show or listened to a podcast or anything, I've never understood a performers other than, so Taylor Swift is allowed to call her, album buyers and ticket buyers fans. That's fairly acceptable. But I've never understood, low-ranking comedians like myself referring to people as we are friends. We are people who congregate inside comedy clubs and theatres and inns and places with power cuts and vineyards and cideries, and we all share the same sense of humour. Those are friends, right? In fact, better than friends, because let's face it, friends and partners, and by partners, I guess I mean my wife, they don't laugh at your jokes. No one in my house, my son has a catchphrase. He's two catchphrases. One is, my bad, which he says about everything, my bad. He's also just turned 13. My little baby boy used to be my little baby boy, and now he says, my bad, every time I, say, can you not leave your, clothes on the floor? Can you not leave your dishes out? My bad, right? And whenever I complain, he goes, give me a break, bro. I never thought, when that little baby came out and I held him for the first time, I never thought that this kid would be calling me bro. But his other catchphrase that he likes to say is, you're not funny. You're not funny. Which is just his very bad impression of everybody on Twitter. Anyway, what I'm trying to say to you right now listening to me is we are friends. We share the same sense of humour. You laugh at my jokes, which makes me very happy. And it's you that I think about when I'm, that terrible moment when you're in bed at night. You're like, when the lights go out and you're alone with your thoughts and you've made a vow to not stare at your phone. Even if you're in a hotel and there's no one to tell you to put the brightness down, and you don't have to hide under the covers glancing at it. You know those nights when you put the phone in another room saying, I'm not going to stay up all night Googling pointless information and seeing what my first girlfriend I was going to say primary school. I don't think you have a girlfriend in kindergarten. No, you don't. If you do, you've got bigger problems than this podcast. Whatever it is, Google it, looking up old girlfriends. See, rambling. This is what this podcast is. We're not editing this shit, as you can tell. I don't think anyone's got this far thinking, whoa, this was tightly edited. My point is, you know, when you're in bed at night and you're alone with your thoughts, and it's like, and annoyingly, you've not been able to drink yourself to sleep. You've not taken a sleeping pill. You're not looking at your phone. And you're stuck with that terrible thing when you're stuck with your thoughts. Oh, God, the voice in your head just telling you what a piece of shit you are, reminding you of all the embarrassing things you've done. Like every time you're just about to doze off, it's just like there's this little demon just tapping you on your head like this. I don't know if you can hear that. I'm sure you can. Just tapping you on the head going, Oi, James, remember that time you did that thing? Everybody... I don't want to accidentally say something. Come to a Long Bait show if you want to hear me accidentally slip out something terrible I've done that I get. Anyway, I've got to go. I am going to the YMCA shortly in St. John's to get my swim in. Love the YMCA. Two things I don't love about it. I think that if you're going to have a chit chat, there is time to just strap the penis in something. Doesn't just either towel over or underwear on before coming over to ask me, you know, how the boat is doing, that either boat I don't own or the snowplow, which again, I don't own. People park shit in my driveway, is what I'm trying to say. So don't have to be and ask me how X, Y, and Z is doing just because you've seen it outside my house, right? Just because you've seen, you know, I don't know. So anyway. Also, one thing I thought that had gone after the COVID was the old, you know, in the public shower, the dudes that blowing their nose in the shower, you hear that should have gone with COVID. That should have gone the way of, I don't know, men not washing their hands after pissing, which again, unfortunately, has come back with a vengeance. Oscars this weekend. I'll be back next week to talk about the results. I'm going to the Y. I want to answer your questions. And like I say, you're my friends. So I will answer anything at all you want. So very quickly before I go, if you are looking which movies to watch this weekend ahead of the Oscars, I will quickly whiz through. I haven't planned any of this. That's why it's called Everyday Ramble. It's not every day though. It's episode one. I'm criticizing the title already. American Fiction, probably my favorite. Funny, thought provoking. Just a wonderful. Wonderful, spot on film that kind of sums up everything that's wrong with everything, and also has very moving and funny moments. Anatomy of a Fall, admittedly brilliant. Wanted to not like it because everyone likes it, and I try to be contrary, but I just don't always generally agree. I mean, again, some people are going to shoot me for this, but that movie Dunkirk, I must admit, I actually walked out of the cinema. It's so noisy, just these sound effects, no plot. I actually came home and watched The Toxic Avenger on VHS when I went to see that. But Anatomy of the Fall, gripping, long, obviously, but clever. I don't know how I feel about movies without any resolution. You know, it's like, oh, well done. You couldn't be bothered to write an ending. But, you know, it is good. It's still just a courtroom drama. I mean, do believe the hype, but don't believe the hype, if you know what I mean. That doesn't have quite the same ring to it, does it? Public Enemy, we love that. Do believe the hype, but don't believe the hype. Barbie, yeah, you've all seen it now already, at least once. Very good. Some of the bits with, some of the comedy was a bit bored. Some of it, anyway, you know, it did its job. Great movie, Barbie. My wife went to see it, and then we all went as a family, actually for my son's 10th birthday. We all dressed in pink, had a wonderful time. Love the messaging. Some of it possibly a bit simplistic, but hey, you know, when it's a good message, it doesn't need to not be simplistic, I guess. It sounds like I'm trying to be critical of it. I'm not trying to be critical of it. I am saying some of the plaudits maybe over the top. But anyway, the holdovers, like I say, great. Some great performances. It's not going to change the world. Killers of the Flower Moon, remarkable. Highly impressive. Went to the cinema to see that on a Monday by myself. There was one other person in the cinema. And I must admit, watching that by yourself was quite sinister. It was quite scary. And I did keep half expecting Robert De Niro or one of his people to come up behind me. And even when you watch a horror movie in the cinema by yourself, Maestro, I mentioned, Oppenheimer, same deal, Past Life, same thing, great, very clever, a little bit boring, Poor Things, surprisingly funny, Zone of Interest, absolutely horrifying, as it is supposed to be, about a subject matter that is, of course, meant to be horrifying. I am slightly bored of people patronizingly talking about the importance of making films about the banality of evil. We know how banal evil people are. Like, I don't think there's any of us that think that the most evil people in history, such as the Nazis, were kind of, you know, pantomime villains sitting around going, ah, ha, ha, ha. Like, we are past that. We are aware of the banality of it. So, I mean, yes, let's keep, you know, let's never, ever, ever stop making films about this and stop highlighting it. But these movies where, you know, arguably self-indulgent, taking on other people's stories to further your own careers, is possibly questionable slash problematic. Of course, you know, not an enjoyable watch, but then neither is it supposed to be. But so as to say, those are my, and if you don't want to watch any Oscar movies, then watch Ordinary Angels with Hilary Swank. It will make you cry, and watch Anyone But You. And that will make you laugh. And if you want to feel quite uplifted, watch Mr. Dress Up, which is a wonderful documentary that I took my sons to see at the Imperial Theatre here in St. John 1 week or 2 weeks ago. And the producer, creator, visionary brains behind it was Mark Bishop, a St. John-born filmmaker now based in Toronto, who makes hundreds of TV shows all over the world, heads up this massive company. I don't know how he does it all. And he has crafted this truly remarkable documentary called Mr. Dress Up for Amazon Prime, which they then showed on the big screen here in St. John. Right, I'm going to go to the YMCA, get myself all warmed up to give blood, hopefully not give any mad cow disease. Thank you for listening. If you've made it this far, send me your messages. And when you're alone with your dark thoughts tonight, think of me just, well, not in that way, think of me and how much you mean to me. Because really, like, you know, I am just a madman sitting at his desk surrounded with literally a padded cell because I'm surrounded with cushions, ranting and raving, if you're not here with me, just in the same way I'm just a man standing in the corner of a bar or a corner of a legion, screaming and shouting if you don't come to my shows. So this is it. Right, I'll be gone 45 minutes every week. I will be talking life, comedy, parenting, life with ADHD, life on the meds, life off the meds, YMCA visits, writing stand-up, electric cars, movies, sex. Just got to say sex, don't you? Just to get people to, to click. Is that the podcast equivalent of click? What's that thing my kids say? Well, there's people saying all their YouTube videos, smash the like button, smash it, subscribe. Well, thanks. This show is produced by the wonderful people at Podstarter. Thank you, John and Reese. It has not been edited. We play it as live. Don't need me telling you that. You're like, yeah, we just listened to you talk a load of shit for 45 minutes, Mullinger. We're pretty bloody... it's pretty apparent this ain't edited. But I have no idea what to do with this file afterwards. And Podstarter are truly the best at what they do. They have some of the best podcasts out there. I know this isn't one. So go and listen to their other podcasts. They will inspire, uplift, enlighten, and change your life. This one will not. But I will be with you every week for company. Thank you very much for listening. I've been James Mullinger. Oh, I almost forgot. On Saturday night, had the immense pleasure of going to see Ice Cube right here in St. John. It was absolutely remarkable. Incredible achievement just to get Ice Cube here. I mean, again, there's bigger venues like the Avenir Centre in Moncton. But he came here to TD Station, or as hundreds of people shouted at me at various points on Saturday night, where Harbour Station used to be. God bless everyone who did that. It never stops making me laugh. But I last saw Ice Cube live in 1994 at the Reading Festival, which is one of a festival that's still going now. A festival my dad went to when he was a kid, and I went to every year that I could save up enough money to go. And he was absolutely incredible. August 1994, I saw Ice Cube. The Predator was like my favorite album at the time. To this day, When Will They Shoot is one of the greatest songs of all time, I believe. So to see Ice Cube again, 30 years later, and to get to be there with my son was just a really, really incredible feeling, and just the energy in there. I mean, I love anytime I see a Harper Station or TD Station just absolutely rammed. It's just the greatest feeling. And him coming out on stage again, same energy, same everything as 30 years ago. I think I was 16 when I saw him, so my son's 13, so it was amazing for him to see that and for me to experience it with him. One of my greatest joys now, as my kids get older, is enjoying, you know, live events with them, obviously, you know, watching movies with them, but going to concerts. Last year, for example, I took Hunter, my eldest, to see Guns N' Roses. I'd never seen Guns N' Roses. It was like my dream as a child to see Guns N' Roses live. And I remember when I was about, I don't know, 10 or 11, saying to my parents, you know, it was my dream to see Guns N' Roses at the Monsters of Rock Festival in Castle Donington. And I would love to have tickets for my birthday. And my birthday came around and they gave me an envelope and I'm like, yeah, this is it. And my mum says, well, it's the next best thing. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder what the next best thing is. Slayer, Anthrax, you know, Skid Row. No, it was Cliff Richard and the Shadows at the Reading Hexagon. Not the next best thing, I will hasten to add. That is not the next best thing. I will say, however, incredible concert. And that was my first live concert. I still have the ticket. I remember being in there. And when Hank Marvin started playing the guitar, the sound, having listened to obviously music my entire life up to that point, and been, you know, a massive, you know, in a house, you know, when my dad's a record collector, hearing a guitar live, I remember sitting there in the Reading Hexagon, Hank Marvin starts playing guitar, and I just started weeping, just tears of joy. Like, I couldn't believe that, you know, there was this thing that could make you feel like that. And that was my first kind of experience, I think, of the power of live entertainment, the power of live music. But of course, I didn't see Guns N' Roses, and I still didn't see them for decades and decades and decades. And let's face it, I mean, you know, it seemed like for many years they were never going to, that Slash and Axl would never perform together. Anyway, last year, Moncton Stadium at the University of Moncton, Guns N' Roses live with Carrie Underwood, 3-hour blistering show. Granted, Axl Rose's voice is not in good shape, but again, incredible energy, 3-hour blistering show. So it was amazing. So to get to do Guns N' Roses last year, which was my dream bands to see live as a child, and then get to see Ice Cube, who was like one of my favorite artists of all time. And, you know, someone that I did see live. So, you know, it was a wonderful thing. Amazing energy. Bit annoying. The lineups to get in, it was quite a weirdly badly organized thing where, because Kyle Wills, amazing local rapper by the name of Kyle Wills, was opening for Ice Cube, which was just brilliant to see local talent on there, but also Classified also open, which again, just incredible, blew the roof off. And I was desperate to see Kyle. Kyle, old friend, we were both in a movie called Anonymous Zombie together many years ago. And funny enough, before the show, I was in a restaurant in Uptown St. John, bumped into Sheldon Garland, who was also in that movie with us. Sheldon, also, you may have seen in Ugwug, the children's show that I did last year. Anyway, Sheldon was lucky enough to see Kyle. I arrived, the doors were opened at 6:30. I arrived at 6:30. The lineups were insane. I have no idea why it was going so slow, because it is possible to get, you know, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 people through doors quickly. But for whatever reason, it wasn't happening. And Sheldon told me that Kyle did a blistering job on stage, but devastatingly, I was standing in the world's longest lineup trying to get in, and eventually got in. Took about an hour and 15 minutes, I think I was in line. Anyway, none of that was going to, I wasn't going to let that spoil the show. Fact is, Ice Cube in St. John, great show, and I got to experience it with my son Hunter. Happy, happy days.
Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.